Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank H1 2021 earnings call. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nneka Onyeali-Ipke. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and welcome to Fidelity H1 2021 earnings call. I want to apologize for the late, the delay was due to technical issues. My name is Nneka Onyeali-Ipke, the Managing Director of Fidelity Bank, PLC. With me on this call are members of my executive team, namely Kevin Ugwuoke, the Chief Risk Officer, Kenneth Opara, Executive Director, Lagos and Southwest, Victor Abejegah, the CFO, Boye Ogunmolade, our Chief Compliance Officer, Stanley Amuchie, Technical Consultant to the bank, Akintoye Babalola, the Treasurer, Adetunji Mustafa, Division Head, Strategy and Business Transformation, and Sam Obioha, Head of Investor Relations. We uploaded the investor presentation on our website a couple of days ago, and we hope you had time to review the numbers. Nevertheless, I will give a general overview of our operating environment and our financial performance in the review period. Thereafter, we will take your questions. Our outlook for Nigeria is positive. The average oil price in the review period was above $65, while average crude oil production increased from 1.56 million barrels per day in H2 2020 to approximately 1.62 million barrels per day in the last 6 months. The IMF revised the Nigeria GDP growth forecast upwards to 2.5% from its earlier projection of 1.5%, citing stronger economic recovery as the COVID-19 vaccine rollout increases. This forecast was validated by the 5.01% GDP growth in Q2 2021. The economic performance recorded in Q2 anchored on a strong growth in the trade, agriculture, information and communication technology, pharmaceuticals, and real sectors. We expect that the growth trajectory in the non-oil sector of the economy to continue in the medium to long term. Moreover, there is increased focus by the government on solving the security challenges of the country. Headline inflation has also been trending downwards since the end of Q1, from the height of 18.17% in March to 17.38% in July 2021. This came with several schemes launched by the federal government, the real sector of the economy. The most important regulatory activity in the review period was the introduction of the framework for the introduction of the e-Naira. Although the regulators are still fine-tuning the final details before the launch of the initiative, without a doubt, the e-Naira will disrupt the payment system as we have it today. It will also threaten a few income lines in our e-banking books. Nevertheless, the bank that wins is the one that can adopt and innovate. We have a few aces up our sleeve of things that we would unravel in the coming days. The Petroleum Industry Act is also a very important piece of legislation. There are countless opportunities for banks as the act has opened up the most lucrative economic sector of the country today. The restructuring of the NNPC as a profit-making organization, the setup of the commissions to regulate petroleum businesses, the 3% grant for the host communities are key opportunity areas for DMBs and other stakeholders in the oil and gas value chain. I will now speak to our H1 2021 performance. We closed the period with a PBT growth of 72.4%, rising to R20 billion from R12 billion in H1 2020. In absolute numbers, our PBT grew by about R9 billion on the back of a very strong growth in non-interest revenue, which grew by 27.8%, as well as a 9.8% decline in operating expenses. The key drivers of the non-interest revenue include account maintenance charges, which increased by 50.6%, digital banking income recorded 49.4% growth, trade income grew by 33.7%, while other activity-based income grew by 20%. On our net interest income, which increased by 4.1% to R50.3 billion, this was on account of the 1.7% growth in total interest income, which was complemented by a 1.2% decline in our total interest expense. However, interest income on liquid assets dropped by R9.6 billion for two reasons. Firstly, the average yield on investment securities was low within the period under review. Secondly, we dropped our total investment securities by R52 billion between December 2020 and June 2021 to optimize our balance sheet and moderate the impact of low yields on our earnings. This led to a drop of average yields on earning assets, which translated to a drop in net interest margin to 5.3% from 6.4% in H1 2020. However, we maintained a low cost of funds, which averaged 3.2% H1 2021 from 4.3% H1 2020, despite a 15.3% expansion in interest-bearing liabilities. It is interesting to note that although the average cost of deposits have remained low at 2.7%, interest on deposits are ticking up with the gradual recovery of business activities and market yields. On the asset side, our balance sheet, we repriced our risk assets to reflect current market realities. But as you're well aware, it is easier for customers to push for an increase in deposit rates than to accept upward adjustment in lending rates. Our operating revenue increased by 10.2% to R70.2 billion, while operating expense dropped by 9.8% to R42.2 billion, driven by the benefits of our cost optimization initiatives, as well as the benefits of selective remote banking, which has also crushed our general office expenses. Key cost lines dropped by R7.2 billion cumulatively, which translated to a decline in our cost-to-income ratio to 64.8% from 65.1% in 2020 full year. And we are within our full year guidance of below 65%. Net loans and advances grew by 15.8% to R1.5 trillion, with four key sectors responsible for over 70% of the absolute growth. The sectors include construction sector, which grew by 70.5%, oil and gas services, which grew by 59%, transport grew by 25.7%, while public sector grew by 17.3%. However, the actual growth of our total loan book was 14.7%, while the impact of exchange rate adjustment accounted for 1.1% growth in the loan book. Overall asset quality improved with the NPL ratio, this I mean the Stage 3 loans, dropping from 3.8% in 2020 financial year to 2.8% in 2021, while cost of risk declined from 1.4% to 0.03%. Total customer deposits increased by 16.5% to approximately 1.9 trillion compared to 1.7 trillion in December 2020. This translated to an absolute growth of 281 billion. Savings deposit grew by 3.2% to 437 billion from 424 billion in December 2020. During the period, we witnessed some pressure on savings growth due to the rising yields in the market. However, we have consistently maintained a healthy deposit mix. Our low-cost deposits grew by 13.5% and was responsible for 75.5% of the absolute growth of our total customer deposits. We also saw a strong growth in our FCY deposits by over 20%, from $745 million to $894 million, as we continue to deepen our drive in the diaspora banking space and the export space of our business segment. Foreign currency deposits now represent 18.5% of our total customer deposits from 17.5% in December 2020. We have continued to gain traction in retail banking as we now have 55.1% of our customers enrolled on the mobile banking platform and 89.3% of our customer-induced transactions done on our digital platforms. Our NIP transactions increased by 90% during the period, with Fidelity Bank controlling about 5% of the market. Our regulatory ratios have stood above the required threshold for our capital adequacy ratio at 18.8% from 18.2% in December 2020, while our liquidity ratio remained high at 33.3% above the minimum requirement ratio of 30%. I want to thank you all for listening, and I will now take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star and then 2. Again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then 1. Our first question is from Duyu Makuroki of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hello. Hello to everyone on the call. Thank you very much to the Fidelity Bank management and team for the presentation and also for taking questions from the public. My name is Doye from Renaissance Capital. I just have a number of questions. You released, quite strong numbers. I just wanted to take a deep dive. So my first question really would be on your outlook for cost of risk and NPLs for the rest of the year. After we saw that, significant plunge in first half impairments compared, on a year-on-year basis, I'd just like to know what the outlook here is, and if you could provide some upside and downside risks, that would also be helpful. Then also, what percentage of your book is still under moratorium, and how are these faring? The third question would be updates on your airline exposure, if you could share some of those with us. Then moving on to your margins, we've seen significant decline in margins across the banking industry, but Fidelity seems to be holding up quite well. How do you see this? How do you view the interest rates environment, and how do you see this evolving into the second half of the year and also next year? In just on the back of margins, how much does Fidelity have in special bills? And how much do you also have in CRR? What is your effective CRR as at first half of the year 21? And then also, what is the average yield on your T T-bill portfolio and, you know, other portfolios as well. If we could get an idea of what is really driving the margins, that would be great. I have a few questions, but I would let these ones run and, you know, I'll come back with them as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Doye. Thank you very much for your questions. Okay, fine. We recognize that the improving business environment and the resulting impact on the quality of our risk assets. That's why we moderated our impairments for this year, because our expectation is that the cost of risk should come down in 2021 compared to 2020. But we are always quick to revise our guidance downwards. What we realized is that we noticed that the economy has picked up quite quickly and it's doing much better than we anticipated during the COVID period. So our cost of risk for H1 is 0.03, and we had guided for 1.1 to 1.1 to, we had guided for 1 to 1.1 for full year. You can find this information on slide 28 of the presentation. You know, so like I said, it's the environment that's improving. We've seen traction in businesses opening up. We've seen good turnovers from our customers. So we're confident that we don't have to make this amount of provisioning in the year. Then secondly, on the non-performing loans, we don't see any specific issues on our books at the systemic level. You know, we don't, the economy has opened up and business activities are gradually returning to pre-COVID years. Hence the asset quality has improved significantly. And naturally, as the economy gets improves, it will improve. Our NPL ratio right now is at 2.8 from 3.8 of 2020. So we expect it to remain this low for the rest of the year. We don't have any anxieties. Thank you. Can I go on to your next question?
Yes, just on these questions, I asked two questions on what percentage of your book is still under moratorium, and also updates on airline exposures, if you could share some of those.
Okay, yes. On this one, we restructured 32% of our loan books, and 65% of our loans are funded by intervention funds.
Okay, so the 30, you restructured 32% in 2020. Are those all still under, you know, the restructured program? Or I'm just trying to get an idea of what's happening.
Yes, what's happening is that some customers, I would have them, let me just give a brief explanation, and I have my CRO speak to that specifically. Some customers have requested to start to pay their interest and their loan, because I mean, your loans are waiting for you anyway. Some, because of the cash flow that they've seen and the recovery, they've asked to come back to full activity of repaying loans as and when due. Some have remained under the portfolio still, I mean, the restructuring still. So, like I said, it's driven by the customer's activity. Some still want to stay with the forbearances, but some other customers have come back and are taking the prepayments as when due. But I'll have the CRO speak to this. Kelvin.
Thank you very much, Neka. Doe, thank you for the question. As the MD said, at the start of the pandemic, we restructured about 32% of our loan book. Now, of this 32%, 65% of them were funded with intervention funds, and that includes bailout loans and to state governments and to select sectors, manufacturing and so on. Now, the balance of 35% we funded from our liquidity. Now, as things are improving, we expect that those loans that got some forbearance will start repaying and things will normalize. So at this point in time, the entire risk assets that we funded with intervention funds, they are still enjoying some moratorium. Recall that the central bank gave an extension to that moratorium of about 1 year. So majority of our customers who were under the intervention scheme took advantage of that, and they are still enjoying some form of forbearance, either for principal or for both principal and interest. At this point, just for those that we funded with our own position, just about 10% of them are still enjoying moratorium on principal or any other form of concession. So we see that generally the economy is picking up, and the forbearance is, those enjoying forbearance, we're seeing an easing in that. And we expect that to continue to be the trend as things improve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I'll take on the airline exposure.
Yes, the airline exposures, our airline exposures are all performing. As you are well aware, we are the collecting bank for the two major airlines in Nigeria. And both airlines control more than 35% of the local air traffic in Nigeria. The industry is gradually returning to normalcy with the resumption of air travels all over the world. So we're seeing the portfolio is performing optimally. Thank you.
Thank you. Then the next question is from Jerry Nguye of Cardinalstone. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for taking my question, and congrats on the impressive results. I have a few questions. And firstly, on the issue of costs, so yes, we saw the moderation in OPEX, but in particular about lower AMCON charges or banking resolution costs, you know, that you recorded, and I want to believe that that relates to AMCON charges. Can you just give some explanation as to why we saw a moderation in that line item, given that typically it's a function of your asset size? And if I can, from what I can see in your numbers, there was a considerable growth in assets. So if you could just give some explanations around that number. And secondly, on overall cost performance for the period, how sustainable is it? What should you be thinking about your cost line up going forward, given what we've seen, almost 10% decline in the first half of the year? My next question is on your funding. So can you just give a sense of what the funding environment is like for you? Because looking at your term deposits, I see that that's accounted for for most of the growth in your deposit book, term deposits. So can you give an indication of what the funding environment is like for you and what you should expect going forward? And then thirdly, you had said that over 65% of your loan books are funded by intervention. So what's the impact of CBN's new lower rates from 9% to 5% on your loan book overall, the interest income impact?
Okay, just to correct the last statement you made, what I said, or maybe what I meant to say, was that 65% of the restructured loans are funded by the intervention funds, not 65% of our loan book. We have 32% of our loan books restructured, and 65% of those restructured funds, I mean loans, are with intervention funds.
Okay, how much of the overall loan book are funded by intervention funds? And can you give a sense of the interest income impact, opportunity costs, given CBN's rate guidance?
The CRO will take that question. Of the volume.
Okay, thank you for the question. The question is what percentage of our loan book is funded from intervention funds, right? That's about 15% overall, 15% max funded from intervention funds. Then by way of the impact of the forbearance on that segment, the P&L impact was somewhere in the neighborhood of between 10 and 12 billion naira.
Thank you. Jerry, does that answer your questions?
Okay, so let's just...
Yeah, but also...
Let's give a call on the AMCON charge.
Yeah, but also...
I think you asked...
The AMCON charge, we've taken 75% of our AMCON charge. So Stanley, you can take on that.
Okay, good. So normally, you know, ordinarily would have taken the full at half year. But what has happened this year is very special. AMCON, they're still trying to conclude on the new AMCON Act, you know, to come into effect. So normally you would take the full as soon as you're given the advice from Central Bank, you know, to take in that cost. But that has not happened yet, but we are just very prudent enough to start doing what we did to take 75%. That's why you're seeing 75% in the second half. We're going to take the balance, and hopefully whatever happens, at any time we'll get that that advice, we'll take it in this last part of the year. So that's why you see that drop you're seeing there.
Okay, and on funding, your term deposits.
On funding again, yes, you said that we had some growth from term deposits. We are doing a lot internally here. We've noted that ourselves. We want to grow from the low cost end of the market. We are doing a lot to create some ecosystem of deposit liability generation. We are doing a lot of key distributorship schemes. We've gotten in some very key corporates into the books. And what we're doing is to reinforce most of their distributors and suppliers. These are people that will leave some deposits at a very low cost because it moves from the account to that of the corporate. So that's a very key one we're doing. We're also doing other structures we have built, put in place to make sure that we're able to mobilize at the end of the market. We'll talk about the agency banking. That's one key area we're also pushing very hard. We believe that all this put together will help us to increase our liabilities from the low cost end of the market. And that will help both our NIM play and all the other profitability play that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Tunde Abudoye of FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Tunde Abudoye. Congratulations on your results. I have a few questions. The first question I have is on your interest expense. When you look at it on a Q2 standalone basis, it was elevated for the second quarter. Can you just provide some color on the key drivers and how you intend to moderate this going forward? How should we be thinking about this going forward on a quarterly basis? Secondly, your net interest margin clocked in at about 5.3%, behind guidance of about 6.5%. And that indicates that you're thinking that, you know, you'll see some improvements going forward. Can you give us some color, the kind of tailwinds that you expect to see, and how you intend to meet that going forward? Then on your trading book, you recorded a loss of almost 5 billion. Can you elaborate on the drivers and how you see this turning around? Then on asset quality, we've seen some improvements in your NPLs, but when you look at specific segments like agriculture, education, finance, I mean, they worsened on a year-on-year basis. Would like to know the drivers behind this and what kind of trends you're seeing with respect to debt service. Also, when I look at your loans and advances to corporates and organizations, we see that there's a sizable movement from stage one loans to stage two. Is this an indication that, you know, some assets are worsening in terms of asset quality? Just like some clarity about that. Also, would like to find out what your effective CRR is and how much you have in special bills. That's all. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So I'll start with the easier ones, I guess. Okay, our special bills, we have 135 billion in special bills. and our effective CRR is 35%. And then to speak to the to what you mentioned about our interest expense going up, everybody knows that we witnessed a rising in yields in within the period under review. We noticed that even the Treasury bills, 364-day Treasury bills, moved from 0.77% in January to 7.2% in June. We also noticed, we also know that the OMO bills traded for, is now trading for 10.10%, that's against 5% much earlier in the year. Same thing for long end of the fixed day income, which traded for 12.8% in, which traded at 6.3% in January, is now at 12.8%. So naturally, the rates follow the trend. So that's what explains the reason why our interest expense was higher. But as you can see, this was even moderated, you know, in terms of the impact on our business, because we ensured that now that we knew that that was a situation and a problem, we had to do a lot in terms of raising low cost deposits to moderate the tenured funds that were coming in. So that's all of that is the reason why we are able to maintain our NIM. Of course, the NIM went down, but it's expected, like I said, with all the issues around the rising yields that inflow into all of that. There's as long as you have a drop in the average yields of the earning assets, there's no how that it should not affect your net interest margin. You know, so that would be my answer to that. But the treasurer can speak to that more. Or Victor.
Thank you, MD. I think in addition to the lower yield environment that brought down the net interest margin of the bank, we also carried out very strategic initiatives when we saw that the yield in the fixed income securities were on the downside. We had to reallocate resources and switch some of the funds, key liquid assets funds, into risk asset, a more profit yielding asset, to be able to optimize our balance sheet. And you can see the reflection, the tick up in the interest income line, which compensated for the drop you are seeing in the NIM angle of it. And what
Hello, Samuel, can you hear us now?
Yes, we can hear you. So what happened?
I'm not sure, sir. Your sound just went silent.
Victor just went silent while you were speaking.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. I was trying to offer explanations why we had a drop in the NIM. Like the MD rightly said, because of the low interest yield environment, that accounted for it. What we did also was on the volume side. We took a very strategic initiative when we discovered that the low interest environment would affect the drop in the NIM. We had to reallocate resources from the liquid assets to a more profitable earning asset, which is the risk asset. And from the P&L, you will see that we had a tick up in the interest income on risk assets that compensated for the drop. We had to do that to optimize our balance sheet, and that was the best to do at that period. Thank you.
So the last question will be on the movement of the loans from stage one to stage two, and I'll have the CRO take that question.
Thank you very much, Aneka. As you noted, overall there was improvement in our NPL, and that's reflective largely of the general improvement in the macroeconomy as we recover from COVID, impact of COVID. So that you see that moderating our NPL ratio from 3.8 to 2.8% that we have as at half year. Now, you're right, you saw a specific worsening in agriculture, I want to reassure you that that's not a general trend. It's actually from one customer that had a flu infestation on their poultry farm, and that adversely impacted the ability to repay. So that's something that we have taken adequate provisions on, impairments on. We also do have collateral supporting that exposure, so we feel we're on good grounds as far as overall recovery is concerned on that particular exposure. So it's not a color, it's not showing any trend in that sector. Overall, I would say that the sector has seen growth, and we have had carefully managed increase in our exposure to the agri sector.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is a follower from Due from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I don't feel that my questions were adequately answered, but I mean, thankfully, a number of them were asked by other participants. I'll just go ahead with a few other questions that I had. Could you give an idea of your long USD position as at first half of 2021? Also, does Fidelity have any swaps, and how big would that position be? Thirdly, I'd like to have an idea of what the average yield on the T-bill portfolio was as at first half of 2021, and also if you could share some of your views on how you see the interest rate environment evolving really into the rest of the year and next year. On strategy, we've seen, you know, it's been 1 year since the implementation of your new strategy. Could we get some updates on how the bank, you know, is performing to reach some of those goals? Then, you know, lastly would be on the digital strategy of Fidelity Bank. We've seen, you know, quite a lot of buzz around digital strategies from, you know, other banking peers. So we'd like to have an idea of how Fidelity is, or if Fidelity is looking to also play into this, and you know, also if you could share some of your plans, you know, as regards this digital strategy, that would be great. On the back of that, how does Fidelity view the threats from fintechs? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Doye. The our long position is we're long in dollars by $305 million. So that's our position. Currently, our foreign assets is over $2.1 billion, with foreign currency liabilities at about 1.8, which translates to a net open position of $305 million. You asked if we had swaps. No, we don't have swaps. Any swaps with the CBN. And you also asked, I think I forgot one of the earlier questions, my view of the interest rate environment. Like I answered to the other gentleman, I think I said that at the start of 2021, since the start of 2021, we have seen rising yields in government securities, both on the debt and the money market instruments, and also the aggregate market. So I remember mentioning that the 364-day treasury bills now trade at 7.2 from 1.5 in January, and the OMO bills now trade at 10.1 from 5.7 at the close of January, and that the fixed income space, the long end of the curve, now trades at 13.5, up from 8.75 in January. So we expect that the market yield will moderate. We believe that with the $8 billion to $9 billion in dollars from the reserves, the market is not expecting pressure from government on domestic borrowing. And we also realize that there's also been a launch of the $15 trillion infrastructure fund in October, which we feel will slightly alter the outlook in the remaining months. So we believe that the rates are going to moderate, and that and with the government on the FX side, with the government $3 billion that's coming, I think the funds, the special funds they can draw from IMF, as well as the Eurobond that the government wants to raise. So we also believe that there'll be some reasonable stability on the FX side. Thank you. Maybe the treasurer can add some more to this. Akin.
Okay, thanks very much. I think in terms of, you've rightly said it, you know, it's very complete. Our position on the market prognosis as regards where yield is going is as simple as that. We just feel that it's the 15 trillion infrastructure that will alter that. But given the about eight to nine accretive fund into the reserve is likely to relieve or put some less pressure on the domestic borrowing, so to speak. Now, you also ask questions on the average yield on our treasury bills. Our average yield on the treasury bills is about 6.75. That's where we are. Thank you.
Okay, so there was also another question on the digital strategies. In Fidelity, we believe in the testimony of our customers. There's a lot of buzz, yes, but we'd rather that our customers speak for us. And it is a deliberate strategy. So, because we always keep our word. And to this extent, if you remember, our IV digital assistant was voted the best in the industry based on the recently conducted survey by KPMG. The voice of the client confirmed that we are validating, we are best in the market on that space. And then we also, we dedicate relentlessly to ensuring that the customers get good value. And we are also, of course, we have engaged the services of some of the big consultants to also take us to the next level to review of our digitization exercise. We've achieved so much. Because like you can see on the income coming in from the digital space has increased considerably. So we are on course and we are, of course, you continue to innovate or you die. So we're on top of it. Remind me of the next question that you asked. I already gave you the question on the long position and on interest rate regime and on our strategy. Okay, you asked me another question about our seven pillars of our transformation and our journey to tier one, where we are on it. I can tell you categorically that we've made a lot of success. As you're well aware, our seven pillars are basically on brand refresh. We're still putting together our brand, the brand strategy, the brand that we're coming up with, and that will take us towards the end of the year. On the workforce transformation, we've done all we plan to do for the year, and we're progressing with it. On the digitization, like I said, we've all implemented all what we want to do now, and then the new strategies we're still working on them. And then on the basically from the numbers that you can see that everything that we've planned to do this year, we are on course on all of them. And the beauty of it is that on our guidance, on what we guided the market for, the only item that we're behind on is the one on the name. All our guidance, we're working with them, we're doing very well on them. We are on course on all the guidance because we guided the market for PBT of 35 billion for full year, and we're on 20.6 for half year. We guided the market for 10 to 15% on the loans. We're on 15.8% now. On deposits, we guided for between 15 and 20% for full year. And we grew by 16.5%. On the NIM, like I said, is the only one that we're behind on. On our cost to income ratio, we guided the market for below 65. We're on 64.8 and still working. On the ROE, we guided the market for 12.2%. We have achieved 14.2%. Cost of risk, we have achieved 0.3%. That's against the guidance of 1% to 1.2%. And on the NPL ratio, we've done a good job. We're at 2.8%, well below market, well below the guidance from the regulators. And we will meet all the expectations of the market on our journey to Tier 1. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very clear. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Konstantin Rozantsev of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes, hello. Thank you very much for the presentation. I had a few questions I wanted to ask. The first one, could you please share some color about the living quality risks that you see across the banking sector in Nigeria more broadly? So which segments and sectors are at risk, at particular risk at this stage? And I guess as a subset to that question, the recent years have seen a recovery in credit growth across the sector more broadly. How do you assess, how have risks been managed alongside this increase in growth? And has it, has it resulted in an increase in risks in some particular segments, of loan portfolios of the banks? The second question, could you please comment on the current setup of the central bank's forbearance with respect to recognition of provisions for the restructured loans? So does the central bank, I believe at the onset of the pandemic, the central bank allowed banks to restructure loans and it did not request them to recognize appropriate provisions for these initially. So what's the status of this forbearance measure now? And what's the stance of the central bank with respect to, requiring banks to set up appropriate provisions? The third question I would have is on the upstream oil loans. I understand that following the prior oil price crash in 2014-15, there's been quite a lot of restructurings in this segment that took place. So could you comment on the status of those restructured loans? Have those borrowers exited the restructurings already or not yet? And generally speaking, could you please comment on what oil price level would cause these borrowers to be under stress? So if oil prices go below that level, you would see more pressure on those borrowers. And lastly, the very last question I would ask on the net interest margin. You might have mentioned this already, but could you please again reconfirm? So do you see that net interest margins have bottomed across the sector already? And should our expectation be that we should expect recovery in NIMs across the sector? Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay, fine. I'll start with the easier ones naturally. So you've asked the question about the sectors of the market of the quality of risk assets and which sectors are at risk. So my way of answering that question will be to start with the top performing sectors in Nigeria. And then, of course, the ones that are having issues that, of course, we need, not that it's an issue to that extent, but you need a little bit more attention on it. What we have seen is that we have seen top performing growth in trade. We have seen in manufacturing. We have seen in construction. We have seen in transportation. We have seen in agri and in trade. Okay. And we have seen that the contracting GDP sectors are oil and gas, the public admin, what I mean like public sector, and then financial and insurance. And so that will be my answer to that. And what's the quality of risk we're seeing? Like we said earlier on, the Nigerian economy is recovering in real terms quite quickly. And we have not seen, from our customers, the only problem that we see is the issue of the non-availability of the FX. But even at that, we're trying to mitigate that by ensuring that we deepen our relationships with our diaspora customers who are inflowing money into the country. We have seen a significant growth so that aside from putting pressure on the government sorting of the FX, we're also doing a lot on the export desk. Our export NSPs and inflows of exports have tripled in the last 1 year. So that's an area that we're focusing on to help us service our customers. But I would like the CRO to deepen this discussion with the the areas of the upstream loans and the questions on the restructured loans and the stand of seats of the central bank. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Neka. Okay, with regards to the upstream sector, yeah, we went through a period of restructure during COVID. Quite a number of those loans were restructured on account of the pandemic. Where are we now in terms of the restructure? Have they all come out of the restructure? The answer is no. They've not all come out of the restructure. They're still going through it. But the prognosis, I think, it's certainly looking positive, going by the global recovery that we see in the global economy, as well as Nigeria's economy. So that will spur demand for that particular sector. So we see that most likely they will be able to come out of that restructure in the near term. What price level? Okay, today the price of crude is upward of $70 per barrel. Where we see a stress will be anything below $30 per barrel. But of course, we know it's a function of both how much you're able to produce from the ground and then to sell. So far, production has been satisfactory. We're at about 1.6 billion barrels per day production level, which is good for Nigeria. And at current prices, that's all good. So anything at 1.6 and prices above $30 per barrel, that's the break-even. That's the point where it will be difficult for them to come out of it. So right now, we're coasting well in that regard. Now, on forbearance, yes, the central bank forbearance is still in place. And you're right, they did not ask banks to take provisions on those loans that they gave forbearance on. That stance has not changed. But what you've seen is that as the economy is improving, a lot of the borrowers that we give forbearance to, they are coming out of that need for forbearance by generating enough cash flows to meet their obligations. Now, we still do have some that are still, but the outlook is that that should also improve. Now, we can't say it's going to be all 100%. We still have COVID variants around and stuff like that. But overall, the regulatory stance is supportive, and there is no requirement right now to take any provision on the loans that we've granted forbearances to. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I would like our Chief Digital Officer, Larry, to speak to the, because we missed out the question on fintechs and the impact of fintechs in our business. I think it was from RENCAP. So Larry will speak to the digitization process and the fintech impact of fintech on our business.
Thank you very much, Ma. Hope I'm coming across loud and clear. With regards to fintechs, at Fidelity, we don't necessarily see them as competition in that sense, and we do not see them as a cannibalizing influence. They present a unique opportunity for us to collaborate and co-create to the extent that the entire digitization drive is predicated on being able to bring services to customers in a more personalized way. We have deployed an API strategy that allows us to integrate very seamlessly with other providers that can deliver value to our customers. So to the extent that we find fintechs whose services are complementary to our core services and we're able to leverage that to bring value to our customers, we're more than willing to entertain that. At the end of the day, what is critical to our digitization drive is the ability to bring value to our customers that's uncommon, to meet them at the point of relevance, and being able to bring to them services that are not readily available, which if we had to spend time developing ourselves would just take us a bit more time. So we see them more as partners in scale, and partners in service, and we're open to collaborating with them wherever and however is possible. With regards to Fidelity's core digital transformation agenda, it's an agenda that began over the last two and a half years, and we have deployed core technology to enable us bring mobile-first strategies to customers. It enables us to promote self-serve, which is what we have done. And right now, we have invested very heavily in customer experience such that we can leverage data and analytics to understand where our customers are going, to preempt what the emerging needs are, and meet the customers at the point of their relevance. I think these are the pillars that defines, one, our digital strategy, and two, our outlook on fintechs. Thank you very much.
Okay, I remember there was a question from JP Morgan that wanted us to speak to the NIM again. Like I said earlier on, our net interest margin came down to 5.3 from 6.4 in H1 2020 because of the drop in average yields on the earning assets, which surpassed the decline on our average funding cost. I would like Stanley to speak more to that and for us to have more clarity on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the speaker actually made a very clear comment about what is happening in the industry. If you look at all the banks that published, you will see that drop in NIMs in most of the banks that have seen their numbers. And what happened was just like at the beginning of the year, rates went down, and before you knew it, it was a quick tick that we saw. And people had gone into certain transactions, and they were now trying to come out at certain levels. So now everybody is aware of what has happened. People are taking positions on how to improve the spread, which is the key thing here. You're giving out your banks like us, Fidelity Bank, all we're doing, we're trying to see how to price those assets properly and better. And also on the liability side, how to generate deposits at a very minimal cost to us to keep that spread. And as we do that, we're seeing that the NIMs, well, the outlook should be more of an improvement than anything else. So in the next half year, that's the second half of the year, we are hoping to be able to come within our guidance on NIMs and even improve. So that's the kind of outlook we need to give on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last question is from Tunde Ungunleye of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my question. I just have some clarifying questions. You mentioned that you don't have a swap contract. However, when I look at your derivative assets, I noticed that there was an increase from 7 billion in 2020 to 50 billion as of H1. And most of these are mostly attributable to total swap contracts. Probably you could just shed more light of, or as regards the nature of the swap contract. My next set of questions is on your asset quality. In your presentation, you mentioned that there was a marginal drop in lending rates. However, when I look at your interest income on loans and advances, it was up 16% year on year. Probably could just give a guidance as to what led to that growth in loans and advances. And the second question is on your stage two loans. I noticed that there was a pressure on your stage two loans. At what point do we start seeing those stage two loans move to stage three? Probably you could just give a guidance in that regard. And then most of this pressure point is coming from individuals and the corporate customers. And on the general question, I just have two general questions. The first is on your agency banking. You've earlier mentioned in Q1 that you are launching in this space, and so far you have over 15,000 agents. I would like to know if these agents were developed in-house or more of a partnership with a super agent network. And the next question is on tax expense. I noticed there was an increase, it was a quarterly increase in your tax expense. Probably you could just shed more light on what led to an increase in this tax expense. And the final question for me is the tax exemption of government securities, which is expected to mature at the end of the year. How should we be looking at your tax rate towards next year? And then probably do you think there's going to be an extension as regards this tax exemption. That'll be all for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll have the treasurer take the question on swap and the landlord take the question on agency banking, because I know we're collaborating with swap agents. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. On the swap contracts, yes, the question was asked, but I think that question perhaps wasn't quite specific. What the MDCO mentioned is that we do not have any swap with the central bank. Not that we do not have swap contracts with other counterparties in the market. The figure you have seen there represents about 125 million swap contract that we have with two counterparties, you know, in the market, and it was fully disclosed, you know, in our financials. So I think it was just the specificity of the question that made us to say yes, we didn't have, just with the CBN only. Thank you.
So, Lara, you want to speak to the agency banking?
Yes.
Yes. Our efforts at increasing our footprint in that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. With regards to agency banking, Fidelity Bank considers banking at the bottom of the pyramid to be essential to our drive, not only from a financial inclusion point of view, but also from a digital inclusion point of view. We have stepped back to review our propositions. We have improved our banking platforms. We have improved our propositions. We have improved actually how we engage. So yes, we did begin with an agency network of about 14,000, but right now we're plugging into super distributors and other acquisition points, which we would not be very specific about for obvious reasons. But we do believe that our ability to acquire agents would be linked very strongly to being able to create value, to people at that level of the society, not just from a service delivery point of view, but also from an income point of view. So it is three-pronged. One, we'll be doing direct recruitment with our own staff and one-on-one interactions. Two, we will be working with other super agents. And three, we will be exploring other collaborations which would enable us gain scale a whole lot quicker. Thank you. So that's the answer on agency banking. I will yield the floor now. Thank you.
Okay, the question on stage two loans, I'm aware, and I know that every effort is being made to work in our loans from stage two loans back to stage one and not in the opposite direction. But however, I would have, our NPL ratio speaks to this directly, but I'll have the CRO discuss this deeper. Thank you.
Thank you very much, MD. The increase in our stage two loans has been more of the result of decrease in our stage three loans. We've actually, with the improvements in the economy, we've seen some of our stage three loans meet the requirements to move back to stage two. And so that's why you've seen that if you look at the change from year end 2020 to where we are today, you find that the stage three loans has come down to about 45 billion from 56 thereabout billion full year 2020. Now we have a focused attention on migrations in staging, and whenever there's a change in staging, a team picks it up and we start investigating. So that continuous effort to see that loans do not go from stage one to stage two, or that loans go from stage two back to stage one or three to two, that's an ongoing effort. So in summary, the increase we've seen in stage two is actually more a reflection of improvements in the, loan portfolio from stage three moving to stage two, and hopefully we'll keep those loans, monitor them, watch over them to see that they also move further back to stage one. Thank you.
Okay, there was another question on the there was another question on tax expense. We are aware of the expiration of our tax exempt by government sector, but I will have the CFO speak to this.
Okay, thank you, MD. The person who asked the question is spot on about the expiration of the tax exemption on government securities in the bank books, and it is true that most banks have enjoyed it in the last 10 years. It is going to end by the end of this year. But I must tell you, preparedness is the game in banking. We are aware of it and we are so prepared. If you check your note 28 on our deferred tax assets, we have about 27.3 billion on that line. And when you have a deferred tax asset, the tax law allows you to elect either to book it or to leave it until future date for use, for utilization. We have elected to keep it to take care of this type of circumstances. The essence of keeping it and booking it at a future date is to provide enough buffer for future tax shock. And this is exactly what we have done. But I must let you know that several engagements are ongoing and various groups are already talking to government to see how it can be extended. Even if it is not extended, we will make use of that deferred tax asset to ameliorate the impact in our books, because that is what it is intended to do. Thank you.
Tunde, has that answered all your questions?
Yes, just a few questions on the growth in the interest income. And the interest income on loans and advances, the 16% growth year on year, what was responsible for that?
Well, hello?
Hello?
Today, can you repeat that question?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
The growth income is as a result of the increase in our loan book. If you notice, we have an increase of 16% on our loan book.
Oh, okay. That's clear. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Jerry of Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you. I just want to confirm, when you were giving your outlook for interest rates, you did mention something about InfraCo. I didn't quite get what you're trying to explain. Could you please expatiate on that again?
InfraCo,
yes, the infrastructure fund that the federal government is trying to float, which should come up very soon.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, the government loans are normally, all the intervention funds are normally at single digit. And I'm sure this is going to come in at single digit. So this will, of course, reduce the cost of for the projects. It will moderate, because the interest rate that for our commercial lending has gone up significantly to anywhere between 15% to 20% now. So the anything coming in from the government is a welcome development. And the treasurer can speak to this as well.
Okay, thanks very much. Yes, you are right to say that the infrastructure bond is coming on board. CBN just said they fixed October for the launch. Yes, we know that this will come in tranches. Expectedly, market think perhaps we will have the single digit there, but depending on the conditions in the market, we could have the double digits in terms of the yield that they will pay on it. But I think the market is expectant of that, and they are already pricing it in. So we just say it's important to just put that in perspective in, you know, sharing our view on the interest rates. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is also a follow-up from Duye at Renaissance Capital.
Hi, just piggybacking on the agency banking question, could we get a split of what is in partnerships and what is Fidelity? If we could get a sort of split, that would be great. I know you mentioned you don't want to give exact numbers, but if we could get a split, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay, so I think in very high level, I will say that direct recruitment would make up of about 30%. The super agents will probably make up about another 40%, and then strategic alliances would account for the rest. But I want to qualify that by saying that with the aggregators, you get larger numbers, but in direct efforts, you get deeper relationships. So it's actually a question of how fast they grow. So if they start off at the same time, you probably would get more going through your aggregators. You get better quality relationships through what you recruit directly. So starting off, you probably end up with 30, 30, and 40. Where 40 goes towards other strategic partnerships that we would want to not go into too much detail about. But as we mature, we would find that the numbers would reverse with a lot more being by our direct recruitment efforts. Hope that answers. Thank you.
So if I could just hone in a bit on that, do you have a medium-term target of, you know, how much, you know, Fidelity is looking to have as direct, in terms of the split, I mean?
Okay, so I'm not quite sure that we're going to go into how much we intend to do by direct, but I'll just say that there are opportunities out there. I mean, we have other players who've grown to 100,000. We have players who've grown to 300,000. So we are going to pedal this to the max. I think in the first instance, we'll be trying to grow the total book to about 100,000, but we will not stop at anything to become the leader in the market space. I think I can say that comfortably without delving too much into what the splits will be by acquisition channel, if we can respect that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the clarity. That's great. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We have no further questions in the queue. Nikki, do you have any closing comments? Ma'am, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments?
Okay, fine. Sorry, I didn't hear you. Okay, I want to thank you all for coming to attending our earnings call. I want to assure you that we'll continue to do our best. We'll continue to do the best that we can to make sure we drive numbers within regulatory boundaries, and we thank you for a good meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this conference call, and you may now disconnect your lines. Ladies and gentlemen, please note this conference has concluded. This event has concluded. You may disconnect. Ladies and gentlemen, this conference call has concluded. Thank you very much. You may disconnect.